IVM.
Hey, welcome to episode 4 of the Sponge Lessons podcast. We're with Ami Parameswaran to talk about the next chapter in his book, Flying Without a Net. Ami, it's a really interesting concept itself, right? Flying Without a Net. Can you tell me where that concept came from?
The title, Flying Without a Net, comes from a book called Flying Without a Net, written by Professor Thomas J. DeLong. His hypothesis is that the business leaders tend to get surrounded by people who say yes to them. Mm-hmm. And they also get comfortable doing the same thing. You know, so you do something which is successful and you keep repeating the same thing.
Right.
But the really successful business leaders are people who are willing to fly without net.
Right.
So it's actually a circus or a trapeze term, right? Mm. Where you're actually jumping from one bar to another and there is no net below to support you. So the really successful business executives take a shot and they say, look, you know, let's fly without net, you know. Right. No one has done it before. Maybe we'll fail. Maybe we'll succeed, but it's worth trying.
Right.
So they take a shot. So this flying without net actually comes from there, how business executives should not get trapped in their own past successes.
Interesting.
And they should be ready to take risks.
So do you think that this is something similar to the innovator's dilemma, or do you think this is something distinct from that?
It's similar to that. It's similar to that. Innovator's dilemma looks at how a company which gets locked into a particular set of customers mm-hmm. tend to keep doing more and more to satisfy those customers, whereas there could be other ways of looking at the market. There could be a subsegment developing in the market which may be finding your product too complicated or too over-engineered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a disruptor comes and says, I'm going to segment the market differently. I'm going to go after this, you know, home user and mm-hmm. give him something. And then they come and, you know, grab your pie.
Right,
you know?
So
it's somewhat similar, but, you know, it's significant.
But this is more from the perspective of, like, taking risks and taking chances. And that kind of, would you say that's the more...
Yeah, so it is like going outside your comfort zone.
Right.
So, you know, if you want me to get into the story I'm talking about
in
the book. So, you know, we were working with this one of India's top pharmaceutical company, you know, GSK.
Right.
And they had a very successful brand called Cobadex, which is basically a B-complex multivitamin tablet. And they were coming, they were getting ready to launch a variation of Cobadex, which contained chromium, zinc and selenium, CZS. So they called us to brief us to create a campaign to promote this Cobadex CZS to doctors.
Hmm.
So when we did an analysis, my colleagues, Kauri Chaudhary and Kinjal and I sat and brainstormed. We said, look, one, there are probably 1,000 multivitamin tablets in this country. Cobadex is among the top 10, let's say. And there are probably 200 tablets which contain chromium, zinc, and selenium, the so-called antioxidants.
Okay.
And there is no point in launching yet another antioxidant aimed at the broad mass of all kinds of consumers. So our own little research said that, look, actually, you can position this Cobadex CZS exclusively for the diabetic patients, the patients who are suffering from diabetes, who need antioxidants. And this tablet could be given to them along with their anti-diabetic therapy.
Right.
And we started digging deeper. We found there was some research which kind of corroborated this and it made a lot of sense to us. So we developed, you know, entire strategy based on that. Went back to the client and presented it to, you know, K.N. Chandrasekhar and Ashok Bhattacharya, who's the marketing head at GSK. So they said, look, you know, you're trying to position this for diabetic therapy, but this is just a multivitamin with antioxidants.
Hmm.
Where are you saying multivitamin in this, you know, visual aid? You're not saying multivitamin. You're not talking about antioxidants. You're talking about diabetes. Now this looks, you know, we don't know whether we can do it.
Right.
You know, so we're not sure that no one has done this kind of stuff before. So instead of shooting us down, and that was very brave on their part, they said, look, we will take you to our MD and let our MD take a decision. So we actually got to present the entire strategy to the MD of the company, then Carl Sundaram. Carl Sundaram listened to us and he said, look, we have never done anything in the diabetic area. Our reps know nothing about diabetes. but it's an area where we should learn. Okay, so because of that reason, and they had plans for launching an anti-diabetic, you know, medicine the next year, they said, let's get into it. So he green-lighted it. Cobadex CZS was launched for diabetes, what we called enhances diabetic control. It went on to, within 1 year, it went on to become the number one antioxidant brand.
Okay.
And, you know, even today, I mean, the story is about 10 years old, but even today, GSK continues to promote that product exclusively for the diabetic segment. And that's actually a clear case where the company decided to fly without a net. They right. went into an area where they'd never been before and they succeeded. You know, so it was an example of that.
So that's actually really interesting. But I mean, like, I think they're not the only people in the medical field who you've worked with who also have a similar kind of story, right? Where they, again, you were trying, they wanted to move in a certain direction.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, very often when you meet clients and if you develop a trust relationship with the client actually wants you to recommend stuff which is not in their comfort zone. Or they might have already taken a decision. But they want you to question that decision. So in the case of Digeen with Sudarshan Jain and Vineet Kalia, they had almost taken a decision based on a big consulting company advising them
right.
that, you know, Digeen should go OTC because Jelusil had gone OTC. So when we went back to them and said, look, these are data points which are there. It makes sense for Digeen to stay ethical and keep promoting it to doctors. And there is an interesting story we can tell about Digeen to doctors. They said, okay, but our consultants are saying the opposite, so let's bring them into the room. So
right.
they brought the consultant into the room and we explained the logic to them. And so they actually changed the decision. They were, you know, going like 180 degrees one way. And then after discussing this, they took a decision which, you know, they reversed their decision and
right.
decided to fly the other way. So which again is a bold, bold call to completely reverse that decision. So, and we've had this number of times where you go and the client has almost made up their mind, or I've talked about in the book about how Tata Motors are very keen on calling their sedan right. Indica sedan, but you know, after a lot of deliberation we coined the name Indigo and it turned out to be a very successful brand name
right,
and probably
right.
one of the most profitable brands the company had in its portfolio.
Interesting. So I think like your main takeaway is that companies need to be fearless around certain things, right? They need to be able to take the chances that they need to take in order to kind of get additional levels of success rather than just in what they're doing. How do you think, like, are there some examples where you think that you applied that in your own context, in your own life?
So in my, I think, in you know, if you want to be successful in your career, you have to fly without a net, you know, at every possible opportunity. I'm not saying you need to jump off a skyscraper. No, that's not the right thing to do. But, you know, you need to take chances. And those,
right.
those, you know. So I remember when I was writing my first book, which was a book of cases. I was writing in 97, 98. And a friend of mine from the US thought it was a good idea. And he said, look, send me the cases. Let me read it. And let me share it with a marketing professor in Chicago and get his opinion. So I sent him the first four cases. So very simple, easy to read cases. So he sent it to that professor, and then after a month, he sent me a very sheepish email saying that, look, I'm sorry, my friend Don doesn't think highly of,
right.
you know, what you've written. And I read Don's email. What he said was, look, this looks like promotion piece for the agency. You know, why will anyone publish this? So I told my friend, thanks for the input, but, you know, I think I'll get someone to publish it. And as it happened, you know, the book was published.
What's
in hardcover.
The name of the book so that people can go out and get
it? Yeah, it's called FCB Ulka, Brand Building Advertising Cases and Concept.
Okay.
It came out first in hardcover, then it came out in paperback.
Oh, wow, you had a hardcover in your first book?
Yeah. Hardcover with, in fact, we had two versions. We had a premium version those days.
Okay.
Which contained a CD with all ads in it, you know. So this predates YouTube.
Okay, so that was how you delivered video content to people's homes.
Exactly. So the book contained a CD.
Right.
And I remember a professor, I think, from INSEAD, Singapore, had picked up a copy of the book and he had taken it to Singapore with him. And he discovered in Singapore that it didn't have a CD. So he wrote back and he located me, wrote to me saying, look, I bought this book. And, you know, it said there is a CD in the book, but there is no CD in the version I bought.
Right.
So I said, look, maybe you paid, you know, the two versions were there. One was $7.99, the other was $5.99. I said, look, you must have paid the $5.99. So you didn't get the CD, but, you know, I'll send it to you. And I sent him a CD and he was quite happy. But, you know, someone told, I mean, a fairly respected professor said, look, why will anyone publish this book?
Right.
But someone published it, someone read it, and including a professor bought it. So that was not too bad.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's what comes across in your chapter, right? That, I mean, like, you have to have a willingness to take chances around what you're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'll tell you another little story. Again, you know, to be a full service agency, you have to provide all the services. So one of the services which we thought we should provide was direct marketing, you know.
Right. Can you explain that a little bit for people who are unfamiliar with
that?
Okay,
so direct marketing actually predates email marketing. You know, in the early days of direct marketing, you actually collected the names and addresses of all your customers. Right. And then you sent them offer letters, you sent them Diwali greetings, you send them birthday cards, you make them feel happy.
Right.
The reason was, if a customer buys your car or refrigerator or television and he gets a birthday card or whatever from the company, he feels that much happier for the company.
Right.
He recommends a brand to his friend. He ends up buying the same brand 3 years later, 4 years later. So you kind of maximize what is known as customer lifetime value.
Right.
By building a customer relationship program. So we were wanting to do that. And we invited one of the gurus of direct marketing, was working in FCB at that time, to come and talk to us, look at our fledgling setup and tell us what we should do. He came, met the key managers here, and then he said, look, you guys can't do it.
Mm.
You know, direct marketing is complex and you guys don't have the competencies to do it. And maybe you should hire an expat or two and bring them into the country for 2-3 years and then let them set it up for you. And then you can, you know, then run it. So we said, look, you know, yeah, it makes good sense to bring an expat and make him work here, but we can't afford it, right? Indian clients don't pay those kind of fees. And therefore, we said, okay, we'll have to think it differently. And then, but we said we had to do it. So in a sense, we had to fly without a net. So we identified a few people internally. We all put our head together, learned what is CRM, how do you build databases, how do you manage it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we set up our FC Buulka Direct, it was called. We got a couple of clients, HDFC, and then later we got Tata Motors. We set up the whole CRM program for Indica. We called it the Indica Club. And and we had almost 75% of all the Indica owners' names, addresses, we managed to collect through a complex process.
Right.
But it was collected. I'm saying this is predating email. And to the extent, you know, 5 years later, we had one of the global FCB experts who came, direct marketing guy who came, and we took him through what we were doing. He looked at our database, looked at what we were doing, and then he turned around and said, look, your program seems to be better than what Ford is running in Europe right now. Because he said, look, you got 75-80% of the car owners in your database, and it's an accurate database. Globally, you know, I mean, that point of time, globally, you get to 60 was great. You know,
right.
You don't get the data. You know, you don't get the data about the customers, and he rated us like A, you know, on that. So, which was something which we did completely against the advice of the so-called experts.
Right.
And then in comes another expert 5 years later. So, the point is that you have to, if you want to succeed, you need to take chances. You need to fly without a net.
Interesting. Do you think that when you're looking at something like this direct marketing thing that you set up, do you think the fact that you guys went into something like this without a net, if you will, where you didn't know what were the rules of the business, right? And so then you just kind of made your own way. Do you think that was a net benefit? And do you think that, is that a corollary to this flying without a net?
Yeah, when you fly without a net, you make your own rules as you go along, you know, and you keep making mistakes and you keep correcting them. For example, we said we'll pick up the database, you know, from the, you know, whatever we get from the client. And then we discovered the database consisted of leasing company addresses.
Oh, wow.
The leasing company address of, you know, used to you.
Right.
What you need is a guy who actually is driving the car. So we had to go and find out where is that data. And then we found dealers kept them in what are called service records.
Okay.
So we had to pull those addresses from the service records. So we, you know, so you had to innovate, you have to you know, change the process. So you keep learning and you keep innovating and you keep figuring out shortcuts
right,
and interesting ways of, you know, making it happen. And also, you want to make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying global experts are not needed. I'm sure they're needed in many areas.
Right.
But, you know, you got to, you know, take a chance.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, I'm sure there are failures when you don't know the rules, but at the same time, the successes are also there.
Yeah, of course, there are many failures where you know, you failed, you tried something, it didn't work.
Right.
But the only thing is, don't bet your house, you know.
Fair enough.
So these are things which you can play with. So, you know, it's not going to affect the mothership. So you keep trying these things. So, you know, and it works, it's good. So
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, I think this is a great place to end the episode. I think you guys should check out the book again. And this chapter in particular is Flying Without a Net.
Thank you.